Okay, so the topic of this workshop is Trudging the Road of Happy Destiny. My name is Yvette, and I am a compulsive overeater and the moderator for this workshop. And our speakers tonight are going to be Ellen and Melissa. So let's start the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept things as I cannot change. Give me courage to change the things I can.
And the wisdom of the difference.
Okay, so the format for this workshop is each speaker will have up to 20 minutes, and then the floor will be open for 2-minute shares. The audio, not video, from this session is being recorded and will not be edited. Please note that this session will be available online or as a podcast feed. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. By sharing, you consent to be recorded. Please do not share if you don't want to be recorded. Here is some Zoom info. Attendees are automatically muted. We ask that you keep what you see and hear here confidential and that there be no recordings or screen captures. Please respect the anonymity of all who attend. Please stop your video if you are walking around or eating. We ask you to rename yourself to first name and last initial. Feel free to add your state, province, or country. Also, please note that chat is set to host only until the speakers are finished. We also have closed captioning available. Click on live transcript. So our first speaker is going to be Ellen. So please share with us.
Thanks. Thanks, Yvette. Hello, everybody. My name is Ellen. I'm a food addict, and I am really glad to be here on this Zoom scene. Trudging the Road of Happy Destiny. That is from page 164 in the Big Book of AA. And it's the very last paragraph of that page. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. So I started out chubby. I'm a food addict from age zero. I'm the old firstborn child. And there's pictures of me in a lake, my mommy holding me, and all my little roles are showing already. Later in life, I did a lot of teaching swimming, and I always wore my father's shirts to hide my body before I slipped into the water, and then I could teach without being nervous what everybody was thinking of me. So that shows where I'm at. I call it escaping into food. When I was in public school, I started skipping school at an early age, you know, like at age 16, because when I had to walk into those classrooms, it was the spring, and I would have to not be wearing a winter coat covering my body. It was 1966, Twiggy became popular. Hot pants, short mini skirts, and horrible comparing myself. And all my girlfriends all wore little hot pants, and I did not. I wanted boyfriends. It was just that day and age of, you know, you had to have a boyfriend. I would have one for a little while, and then they dumped me. My senior prom, I invited a guy from out of town to go with me. He said, I'll go with you, lose 20 pounds. Did I tell him to, you know what? No, I lost the 20 pounds. Then he dumped me a couple months later. I did go off to UMass. I had already started drinking. I was already a heavy smoker. I stole my mother's cigarettes till I was 12. My father was a heavy drinker. And when we'd go down the Cape in the summer, no one was keeping track of us. So we'd go to the beach and older kids would buy us booze and we'd be basically escaping into some kind of adult world that, you know, but we were kids. So by the time I got to college, I went to UMass. I had been going to camp some summers. I loved leaving home. I loved goodbye. You know, I was 12. I was off to summer camp for 4 years. I loved going to UMass. Unfortunately, I discovered pot, copious amounts of food in the dorm, copious amounts of food in the cafeteria, and started skipping classes. And right at the beginning of my freshman year, I ran into some trouble with some creepy guy and never reported it. And so what I would do after that, that's when I started finding some poor young man who was insecure and attaching myself onto them to protect myself. So I had this huge wall around me of food, pot, that was introduced, and crazy boyfriends. And guess what? I never went to class again. So I was asked to take 6 months off of UMass. Goodbye. Oh, and I had, of course, gained 25 pounds. And I always found a guy who didn't care if I was fat after the last guy who told me to, you know, lose weight to take me to the prom. So I moved home. Hello, Mom, I'm back. And went to Northeastern and actually graduated by, again, finding a nice guy who was, you know, very insecure. And I went to class. I majored in recreation. I mean, hello, that's like a perfect thing for me to major in. I was very good in math. I was very good in science, but it didn't dawn on me to actually major in those things. And I would probably have avoided it anyway, if anybody had suggested it. So I did graduate and I moved to Florida. Goodbye. I had my nice recreation degree. I taught, I was aquatics director at the Orlando Boys Club. Again, slipping into the water, slipping out of the water. But I loved those 12-year-old kids. I loved teaching. And so I taught for a while, found another boyfriend and said, after a few years, goodbye, I'm going home. My brain was finally 27 years old. And it's like, all right, I'm going to go do something. I'm going to get out of the swimming pool. So I went to, I got an MBA at Bentley. I tried to get an MBA at Bentley. And I was not going to, I was not succeeding because I was eating my brains out. I was finally facing my reality. I was living at home. I was working full time. I had to take myself seriously. You know, I'd already been screwing around for too many years. And I really started gaining weight. And you may be asking about, well, what food was I eating? I don't know yet. That comes down later in my story. So I think I had been to a few OA meetings in Florida. I literally don't remember them, but I did find a journal at some point in my life that said, I wish that I had the self-esteem that those people in OA have. And luckily, I think my mother went to an OA meeting. I have no clue. But one day at home, as I'm, you know, struggling in my graduate program, lo and behold, there was an OA meeting on my kitchen table, like literally on my parents' kitchen table. And it was in, I lived in Lexington, Mass, and Wakefield was maybe half an hour away. No big deal. I'd already been, you know, schlepping around Florida for 4 years. I was pretty self, very independent. So, all right, let's go. I'm going to try it. So I walk into this, my first OA meeting that I remember. Okay, I got to back up. Oh, this is what I'm going to do. Ooh, Woo, I'm psyched. So, May 1984, there's me in grad school on the left, 2 weeks before joining OA. So here I'm in visiting my friend Andrea in San Francisco. She had been married twice, and she was off having sex with her boyfriend in some hotel room while I was getting pleasantly sloshed and eating my brains out. And so the picture, that's the picture on the left. The picture on the right is after coming into OA. So, yay. So that happened right before I went to my first OA meeting. So there I was at my first OA meeting. And it was called Gray Sheet, which was very strict. And one of the requirements was that you know, and everybody was sitting around sharing and all that nice stuff. And but you couldn't share unless you had 21 days of abstinence. They didn't want drunkalogs. And like, oh crap, you know, if I really want to belong and I want, you know, how dare they say that I can't share? So I had to get my 21 days of abstinence. So the second rule was you had to turn to the person on your right, turn that way, and ask them to be your sponsor. Fine. I wanted my 21 days. I'll do whatever. I'm not coming to this place just to sit there and, you know, be quiet. So I asked Patty, you know, can you be my sponsor? Yes. She gave me the gray sheet, which had like two foods on it, but that was fine. I needed boundaries. I mean, you could tell I had none. And I went, she said, call me tomorrow and read me your food. You know, write your food down. So I called Patty in the morning.
10 minutes.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm going to eat this, 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 and this. And she said, fine. And I did. I brought my Tupperware to work that day. You know, I ate whatever, you know, a leaf of the lettuce and some tuna fish, whatever. And called her the next day. And she said, good girl. Do it again today. And no one had ever said good girl to me. So I did it again. And the other thing was that at age 29 and a half, see the significance of June 4th, which was my first day of abstinence, is I was going to be 30 in 6 months. I was going to be 30, kill me now. I had never been thin and I had never been married. And I was about to be an adult. You know, you don't trust anybody over 30. And there I was on the edge of becoming my own enemy, and nothing good had happened to me yet. So I was really motivated, and I also really wanted to talk at this meeting. So I went through my 21 days and I started preparing. What am I going to say? What is my story? It's like, I've never had this opportunity before to say my story. And I started to think about it for a couple of days, and I stayed abstinent. And I, for the first time in my life, I withdrew from flour and sugar. Not for the first time ever in 29 and a half years. And something weird happened one day. I crashed and I landed in my bedroom. I didn't really crash. It felt like Dorothy landing in the Land of Oz. And I looked around my same old bedroom that I'd always been in for, I grew up in. And I saw colors. I saw the world in color, just like the movie, The Wizard of Oz. And so I detoxed for the first time ever in my life. And that was my first spiritual experience. My sponsor had also said, you know, get on your knees, say the first three steps, do all that stuff. Fine. But actually detoxing physically, and then I could actually see, oh my God, I'm not just fat. I've been eating all my life. So trudging my road had started when I was born, but I didn't have the tools to actually have a happy destiny. I had had happiness, but I was an addict and I didn't know it. It's a miracle to me to me and the heroin addicts. I'm happy to be in that category. Me and the alcoholics. I am so happy that I can say this is a real disease and I'm very cool because I can be like a heroin addict and I have a recovery program. All those wonderful women who listened to me finally when I could share, and they're still my friends after 37 years, some of them the class of 1984, class of 1986, whatever, you know. Connie was just doing entertainment, class of 1988, I know her. I know Margaret Ann, not to break anonymity, but, you know, we've been around. And that filled my soul. Second, I had to not have any boyfriends, none for a long time. And if I even had an inkling of having one, I had to break up with him right away if I knew that it wasn't going to work, because I couldn't live with them for 4 years and then break up with them. No, that's called, when you start to do the steps, it's called using people. And if I use people, guess what? I'm going to eat. So, and I started doing step work right away, you know, AWOLs and all that stuff. And so I actually got a job in an engineering company with my MBA. And I went to my meetings. Just to say, I have not broken my abstinence since that first day. So there's no like, don't hold your breath or anything. I've been abstinent the whole time. So the food is it's understood.
5 minutes, Ellen.
Thanks a lot. My trudging is that I chop, cook, stay out of the ice cream aisle. And if I go in the ice cream aisle, right now it's, you know, it's pretty immune to me, but if I think it's not going to be, you know, immune, I touch my knee as if I'm getting on my knees in the middle of Stop and Shop, which I don't get on my knees in the middle of Stop and Shop, but I touch my knee. And it is to prepare my food every day. That's, you know, that's my, it's very trudging. I mean, it's not fun to cook all the time for me. Some people like to cook, not me. My food plan, you know, has changed over the years. It went from, you know, gray sheet to, well, I'll tell you in a minute. So I met a nice guy at work. After six years of abstinence, I married him. I'm still married 31 years later. He's from Russia. He's from California, but he was Russian. He is Russian. So I had some adventures, you know, the road of happy destiny. Who would have married a Russian? I'm supposed to marry a nice Jewish boy from Brookline. I didn't. I married a nice Jewish boy, sorta, from Russia. And we had two kids. I didn't even think about kids. I just wanted to, you know, hug, kiss, and make out. So we had two kids along the way. And you know, I have to practice program a lot. I really had to do the big book so intently when my daughter was 4 years old. She's 25 now, because she wanted to have play dates with the same old people every day who hadn't invited us over her house, like over their house. How can you keep inviting somebody to your house if they haven't invited you to your house, their house? So obviously I was cuckoo, fear of other people's opinions, and I was taking it out on the next generation. Those are the examples of the excavation that the steps provided me of craziness. Excavate means like, goodbye. And it comes back all the time. I'm always crazy. But, you know, what do I do? I practice these principles in all my affairs, starting backwards. I do service. Here I am. Lately, I think I have Alzheimer's, and I'm totally depressed anyway because of COVID and all that stuff. So my prayer and meditation is, I am happy, I am healthy, I am safe, I am strong, my life unfolds with ease. Continue to take personal inventory. I send my inventory to my sponsor all the time. When I see that I hate myself, I go, and, you know, that's personal inventory. Ellen, you're not being like too nice to yourself, you know, show yourself some love, you know. With my parents, you know, they're all gone now. My brother's gone, my baby brother. I have a sister. What am I going to do for Thanksgiving? I am very nervous. You know, like, how do I have holidays now? Well, somebody in program who's like 32 years old, but that's fine. I'm not against youth, but she said, desire is the breadcrumbs that God puts on the ground. Or if you don't want to have bread, like orange slices. But desire is a good thing. And yes, I didn't have cake at my wedding either, you know. So
1 minute, Ellen. Thank you.
So what desires am I gonna follow now? You know, I don't know. You know, I literally ended up teaching math for 15 years. I didn't throw that guy in there. I did. I went back to 12-year-olds and I didn't teach them swimming anymore. I taught them math. But maybe what I was really doing, I just thought of this today, made me cry. Maybe what I was really doing was I was going back to my own 12-year-old and kind of teaching myself how to trudge the road of happy destiny through the world of math, you know, like, you know, kind of making up for lost time by helping other children. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm in mourning right now, like literally. And, but I'm not taking that mourning and using it to hurt anybody, including myself. I get to go eat supper tonight. I haven't eaten yet. And you guys have all been just miracles in my life. So thanks all for listening.
Thank you so much, Ellen. Thank you. And now we'll have Melissa.
Hi. Just took me a minute to get unmuted. Hi, everybody. I'm going to set my timer. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. Thank you. This is just beautiful. Love seeing all these faces. And thank you, Ellen. I'm going to share my screen as well. And here we go. Okay. So, and I'll kind of go through it really fast. I was born a compulsive overeater. These pictures are me when I've already knew about OA. You know, because just knowing that that I had a problem and knowing that there was a solution didn't necessarily make me follow the program or grab hold of the solution. And I like to show my photos because, you know, there's something about a visual representation that gets some attention, right? That not for me, but for this program that works. You know, this was me when I had just given birth to my daughter. She's 20. She's over 20 now. She'll be 21. And I thought for sure, I had a weight problem my entire life. I've always experienced food with a longing for more. But I somehow thought after I had my daughter, because I had come to OA years before, I had lost a lot of weight really quick and I left. And of course I regained it all. And I thought when I had my daughter, well, I'm going to lose this weight now. There's no doubt in my mind I'm going to lose the weight because I have everything I want. I've got a husband I love, a beautiful baby, and certainly that's going to be the answer to all my problems. Except here I am in the pink. She's older and I got fatter. I did not stop eating compulsively. In fact, life became more demanding with the baby, and my skill, you know, the thing that I turned to, the glue that held me together, was food. And so then it continued, right? This is me throughout the years. In the red, I'm actually hosting a party in my house, and I could barely brush my teeth or put a brush through my hair or clean off the counters, to be honest. Everything felt like a mess. It was very difficult living life. And in the leopard sweater, this was where I was at my top weight. I didn't get on the scale anymore, but it was over 300 pounds. And I was just in a horrible spot because this was our second living child. And I wanted him more than anything. And I could barely hold him because I couldn't get my arms around him. You know, the size of my body made it very difficult to hold him. And he was extremely active. I say was extremely active because now he's going to be 15, and 15-year-old boys aren't so extremely active, only when they want to be. But I would cry because I couldn't keep up with him and I couldn't hold him. And that was just a crushing, painful spot to be in, but it didn't get me to put the food down. You know, it continued and continued and continued. And although here already I was abstinent and I was working on my recovery. This is me with my sisters, my sister-in-laws. And I would say that every family function, I had a drink, I had to drink. And I showed up with every single resentment in like my pocket. It was like a list of everything everyone ever did to me, going way back to when I was 3 and or younger even. And I would drink and eat. And it was like I was living in a box. There was an invisible wall between me and everybody who loved me. These people loved me, you know, and I was walking around mad. I loved them, but I held on to every piece of anger about them. And that's really the way my life continued until I became entirely willing, entirely abstinent, followed the steps as they were laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I recovered. And I love to show the picture of me in the gray dress with my mom. This was at my daughter's bat mitzvah. And I was abstinent, and I was actually recovered at that point. My body just hadn't caught up. Because when you eat abstinently, you know, it's not a crash diet. And so I had recovered mentally, spiritually, but my body still had, you know, some catching up to do. And it was such a happy event that day because I was paying for this extravagant affair and I was perfectly happy with my small plate of food. You know, I think I had like salmon, broccoli, and a salad, which is pretty much my standard go-to, have it everywhere I go. And I was thrilled. And this is me and my mom, maybe about a month ago. I love to show this picture because this is me pretty much for the last number of years. And the incredible miracle about this is that every one of those dresses fits me. And I just know it. You know, I'm no longer addicted to diets, weight loss schemes, none of it. You know, and that's a true gift of being in recovery, being recovered. So I thought a lot about this topic and what it really means, you know, trudging this road of happy destiny. And, you know, more than just thinking about what it means, I thought, all right, how am I going to explain this? And even more than that, like, I thought, okay, how am I going to explain this in a way that could be useful and helpful for someone who's still sick and suffering? Because that's really my charge. Like, whenever we open up our mouths at something like this, I'm supposed to say, I try to meditate beforehand, please let my words hit the ears of someone who I can help, right? So then what does it mean to trudge? Like, what does that word even mean? And, you know, I look it up. I love looking up definitions, and it means to walk slowly with heavy steps, typically because of exhaustion or harsh conditions. And it's also a noun, which means a difficult, a laborious walk. So when I read this definition, I think, okay, this is going to make me a little nervous, because how can I explain that in a way that's useful and helpful, right? I don't know about you, but like when I came here, I did not want a slow, labor-intensive walk, you know? I didn't want to talk about difficult times. In fact, I wanted a quick fix. What I really wanted was I wanted to lose weight. I wanted you to, you know, make me lose weight really quickly. In fact, maybe yesterday, right? Let me just lose weight really fast. Oh, and by the way, can you give me the willpower that I need so that I can lose this weight? And that was really my goal and my motivation. Because I thought, you know, if I lost weight, life would be awesome and I would be thin, right? And I found out through my first trip to Overeaters Anonymous, that really wasn't the truth, right? And that life, you know, my problem wasn't just that I had a weight problem. My problem was that I have a living problem. And, you know, there's this story that I was told about. Here's my phone. There's a story that I was told about two travelers that are traveling on a rocky road. And it was explained to me somewhere in my recovery work that, you know, these two travelers are walking along this rocky road and it's hurting their feet. They're like complaining because they're stepping on these little stones and it's getting caught in their feet and it hurts and it's bumpy. And one of them says to the other one, it would be awesome if this road could just be paved in nice, soft suede. And the other traveler said, or we could get some shoes, right? And that's what the steps have done for me. They've actually given me a set of shoes so that I can walk through the path of life because, you know, I had immature thinking. I thought anything that was uncomfortable should not exist, you know, and I think somewhere, you know, I say I was born a compulsive overeater. I don't know, you know, maybe I was, maybe I wasn't, but somewhere along the line, I cried, someone stuck a bottle in my mouth and I said, this is going to work. This is it, right? And I think it does for a lot of people. It's, you know, even normal people, right? I've taken my kids to, you know, the doctor and you get a shot or something and they used to give you a lollipop because it works. It works. But if you have my problem, I do it till it no longer works. I do it until it hurts, right? If it felt good, I'm going to do it and keep on doing it. And I think, you know, I was told because I'm biologically mandated. My body processes food differently than other people. You know, so I need something that's going to give me a pair of shoes because I can't seem to make them on my own. You know, and then if I look at that other part there about happy destiny. So destiny, you know, I looked that up too. It's the events that will necessarily happen to a particular person or a thing in the future. And it's also the hidden power believed to control what will happen in the future, you know, our fate. So I think, all right, then my destiny, it's this. This is my destiny, this right now, right? All of it, every bump, every high, every low, all of it entirely meant to happen and nothing was wasted or unnecessary. You know, I look at my life and every one of my difficulties has given me the experience needed to develop empathy, compassion, you know, and it's actually what makes me useful. I get the benefit of getting calls from people who are suffering. And I have the benefit of a huge catalog of my own experiences with suffering. right? Someone comes to me with a problem, I probably have experienced it. Like, I think God's just that good. He's just given me a lot of problems to draw from, you know, and I think not only do I have empathy because I have a shared problem, but better than that, is that I have an answer, right? We have an answer for our problems. Because we've, you know, if we've experienced recovery, we know that there is a solution, there's an answer. And I can share at any time what I did to recover. And I can happily report that I no longer live, you know, in bondage to weight, food, diets, my circumstances. I've been set free. And I've experienced the miraculous, you know. And in the chapter of Vision for You, you know, some of the charges that this this talk, we sort of were given a scaffold, like some things to hit on. And one of them was about, you know, experiencing a miracle, right? And so in the chapter of Vision for You, on page 153, it says, it may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. Should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. So I love anything that speaks about a miracle. You know, I just love that word. That word is just incredible. You know, and what is a miracle, right? It's a surprising and welcome event that's not explicable by natural or scientific laws and is therefore considered to be the work of a divine agency. You know, you know, they say like the miracle of rising from the dead. And I say, that's what happened to me. I actually feel like I rose from the dead. You know, I was on the path to an early demise. I actually feel like I was hardly living. When I finally admitted defeat, I didn't even know that that was a huge step in and of itself. You know, step one in the AA 12 and 12 says that only an act of providence, right? The protective care of God can remove the merciless obsession. So admitting I have no other options left but to chase down a miracle, that's where it really began for me, that I recognized that I had nothing else that I could try but this, and that it was going to require a miracle. In page 160, it says in the AA big book, it says the very practical approach to his problems, the absence of intolerance of any kind, the informality, the genuine democracy, the uncanny understanding of these people, which these people had, were irresistible. He and his wife would leave elated by the thought of what they could now do for some stricken acquaintance and his family. They knew they had a host of new friends. It seemed they had known these strangers always. They had seen miracles, and one was to come to them. They had visioned the great reality, their loving and all-powerful creator. So I do. I have many friends today, and these are genuine friendships built on integrity and trust. And unlike my other friendships, when I share one of my struggles with one of you guys, I don't get people to take my part and tell me, you're right. How dare they? That road is way too rough for you. That's so unfair, Melissa. You know, instead I get compassionate reminders to find my part and to rely on God. That's the directions I get from people. You know, and I've got a relationship today with my all-loving, all-powerful creator. And I focus my energies on helping others. And it's a formula that always works, regardless of my problems. That seems to be the formula that works. You know, I think, you know, when I think now to some of the miracles that I've experienced in this program, yes, being relieved of over 160 pounds, right? I have physical recovery. I don't eat compulsively, you know, and my body is normal. I used to have horrible sleep apnea. Like I couldn't sleep without snoring myself awake. And I would snore so loud that my amazing husband, we've been married, it's going to be 25 years. He would have to put the TV on so loud to drown out my snoring. And I would wake up really because I couldn't breathe, but I would turn to this man next to me in bed and yell at him. And that would be the first things out of my mouth. The TV's on so loud, you know, and that was my life, you know, or I would lay in bed at night and I would cry because my kids were across the hall and my blood pressure was dangerously high and I could hear my pulse in my ears pounding. And I thought, because the doctor warned me, you're going to die. You're not going to make it out of your 40s, right? And I would cry because I didn't want my kids to find me dead in the morning. And that's what I really feared. And yet sometimes, not sometimes, many times, I would get out of bed, wipe my tears, and go downstairs and eat. And get back in bed and cry, right? And I did this over and over and over again. And I couldn't get out of it. I couldn't break free of that. And I don't live that way anymore. You know, I can actually run up and down the stairs, you know. I don't get winded. I sleep like a baby. You know, I shut my eyes and I go to bed like that. And I wake up in the morning and I get out of bed. You know, I say, I've been internally transformed more than just externally. I'm inwardly reorganized. My roots grasp new soil. That comes right out of the big book. Meaning the things I rely on, the things that give me nourishment and structure, they're different than they used to be. I don't have to get everything my way. I don't waste a lot of time or energy focusing on the things I can't control anymore. The bumps in the road. Most of the time, right? I'm imperfect. Sometimes I get, you know, that's not fair. You know, I've learned that if I want to live happy, joyous, and free, that my code is love and tolerance, not fair and unfair, not right and wrong. I've learned to pray for love for the people and situations that are troubling. And if I can't find love for them, then I pray for tolerance. I ask God to diminish my sensitivity, to make me less sensitive so that I can be more useful to others. I have a life that's far more satisfying than the one I had before. I'm happy, joyous, and free. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marissa. Thank you both for sharing with us. Okay, so we will now open the floor for 2-minute shares. The chat is now going to be open. If you want to share, please put up your hand using the raise hand function found in reactions. If you need help, you can chat to a host. If you are calling in on a phone, please press *9. I will call on you, and when it's your turn to speak, you'll see a prompt on your screen asking you to unmute. Please select unmute to speak, and the timer will signal when time is up. Please tell us where you're from and how long you've been in OA. Please remember that our traditions state that OA has no opinion on outside issues. Some examples of outside issues are politics, religion, diets, treatment programs, non-OA approved literature, and other 12-step fellowships. Therefore, please base your sharing on your OA experience and do not include outside issues. Please stick to the topic of this meeting. For those who arrived late, the topic of this workshop is Trudging the Road of Happy Destiny. So the meeting is now open for sharing. And who would like to start? Kimberly.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kimberly. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. And I am feeling relaxed and full and grateful to be here tonight. And I have to say, I love what both of you said. Two ways of coming at it, same recovery. And I really wanted to be here tonight because the word trudge is my favorite word in the big book. I have a favorite paragraph, a favorite sentence, and a favorite word. And trudge is my favorite word because it means when I'm not skipping on the road of happy destiny, it's okay. I, in my head, I'm an addict. I want to feel good and be singing and skipping down the yellow brick road of recovery. And when I found that word trudge, it really encouraged me. And then 1 year I was speaking at a French event and I was wanting to have some quotes, say them in English as well as French. So I looked up the sentence in the big book and I found that the French expression for trudge is marcher courageusement, which means to march courageously. And I really like that. As Melissa said, it's a forced march. And so in the journey of recovery, sometimes I'm skipping, sometimes I'm trudging. But if I am with you guys and living in the steps, I'm still on the path to happy destiny. So thank you.
Thank you, Kimberly. Next we'll have Ed, followed by Roxanne.
Hey, I'm not a grateful recovering compulsive overeater and food addict. Absent today, but I should go out in support of the fellowship. The destiny, and I'm grateful. I come to a convention and I hear someone who has spoken at one of my committed meetings, and he to learn so much more about her, because at that meeting, which person only qualifies for 15 minutes, and I don't know what the time frame here was, but it was much more than 15 minutes. And that was great to listen to, and both speakers were excellent. And and I look around the room and I see the people doing service here that I've known for a long time and have heard them speak also. And it just gives me the feeling that I belong, because before I came into program, I never thought I belonged. I didn't belong in my family. I didn't belong in school. I didn't belong in my with friends. And, and program has taught me that I'm worthy enough that I can be with other people. And I don't have to be ashamed of the way I look, because I'm at a healthy body weight. So grateful to be here today, and thank everybody who's been working on the committee and love the convention. Thanks for letting me share. I'm from Boston, I've been in program for 22 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. And Roxanne.
Well, thank you. Hi, my name is Roxanne, and I'm definitely a compulsive overeater. I just thought this was wonderful, and the idea of love and tolerance is really important. When I look at the screen and I see all of you, you're all the kind of people I would have resentments about, because you've got it all, right? You're thin, you're all attractive, you're everything that I want, and I wouldn't like you. I'd have a resentment with all of you. So this has been just the last few. And so when I see pictures, Melissa, for example, of when you were larger, it gives me a connection to you. And I know that you're all, and I've seen many pictures this weekend. So just for the record, I don't resent you. I admire all of you. And I'm going to use this trudging the road to happy of happy destiny, sometimes saying to happy destiny, And I think I'm going to use that as a bit of a slogan for the next little while. You know, I'm trudging there. I'm going to get there. And I have a happy destiny. And I use that to help me through maybe some of the more difficult times, because this is only week 3 for me. So I still have so much to learn. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Roxanne. And keep coming. Keep coming. And who else would like to share with us? Bryce.
Hi. Oh, gosh. Hi, I'd like to turn my video on. I'm Bryce, and I'm recovering compulsive overeater, and I just want to say how much I'm loving this convention. I feel so, so full already. And you guys are amazing and inspiring. I just want to say for myself, I've been in this program 41 years with 40 years of recovery, 40 years of back-to-back recovery. I think the word trudging is a good word. I've had, you know, so many challenges in recovery, including 2 bouts with cancer and all kinds of issues around my sexuality in my earlier life, which I had to work through, which I did, and more recently the dissolution of a lovely relationship that came to an end. So yeah, there are all these kinds of challenges in recovery, and aren't we all so fortunate that we have a program to rely on that is consistent, that works, that is try and true. So no matter what I'm going through, I always turn to my recovery. I turn to my program. It is still the single most important thing in my life. And it just related so much to both of you women. And I so appreciate your service. Without you, we wouldn't be here. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Bryce. Next, we'll have Greg, followed by Debbie.
I'm Greg, compulsive eater. I live near Phoenix, Arizona. Wonderful to hear Melissa and Ellen. And I like the topic, trudging the road to happy destiny. The first thought that came into my mind, I said, wait a minute. I am destined to be happy. That is my natural destiny. I don't believe I'm destined to be sad or angry or selfish or resentful or any of this stuff. I believe that God put me on this planet to be happy, to be joyous, to be free. And I think that is what my natural state is supposed to be. It's me as the addict that veers from that off of this road, thinking of things I can complain about, things I can be angry about. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's this. It's that. I'm really good at coming up with something. I'm at a restaurant. The serving isn't big enough, or the serving is too big because it's over my measure for, or the price is too high. But why is the price too low? It must be something wrong with it. I just got back from Florida for a 4-day at Miami Beach. My daughter moved there for a number of health reasons. Just flew back from Miami Beach yesterday. And I was telling my sponsor today, I said, you know, I really would have liked to stay another day or two. And he said, Greg, enjoy the time you were there for the 4 days. Stop thinking about that I want more. I can always say that, and I still do often. I've been in program since 2006. I always, okay, I've been somewhere for 2 weeks. Why wasn't it 15 days? No, why wasn't it 16 days? Well, what about the first 2 weeks? So that's what that means to me, charging the Lord happy destiny. I remind myself that for me, my higher power destined me to be happy, joyous, and free, not angry, fat, and bondage to myself. So it's me that seems to veer off the road. I don't seem to be swept up because of waves or wind or chocolate or anything else. And I do it all the time. Thanks. So I believe I'm destined to be happy, joyous, and free. Oh, yes.
Thank you, Greg. Next, we'll have Debbie.
Hi, Debbie, grateful compulsive overeater. So glad to be here tonight. So glad to listen to you all. This is what my big book looks like. My big book went through Hurricane Sandy. I'm trudging this road a while. And I used to go to a meeting that we read this at the end of every meeting. And I just, see to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. It is a fact. Because I read this and I believed it, because there were times when I couldn't walk. So when I trudge this road, I'm definitely trudging, sometimes in a wheelchair, sometimes in a walker, sometimes with casts on my arms. I'm always trudging this road. Thank God I am healthy today. Thank God I listen to everything that you guys say, because I know it will be okay. Because I'm hurting, I don't have to hurt myself. And because I show up, and I suit up, and I do the right things, I know I'll have another good day tomorrow. I just wanted to share that. Thank you so very much that we're all on the road of happy destiny. And I'm so glad to share this road with you. Have a great night. God bless you.
Thank you, Debbie. We have time for maybe one more. Anyone else? Okay, well, I can't take the silence anymore. My name's Yvette, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you both so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope on this great topic. I like the idea of trudging, because sometimes it does feel like a trudge, you know, and sometimes it does feel like I'm skipping. But, you know, happy destiny, that is what my higher power intends for my life. That doesn't mean it's always going to be easy. Happy destiny in my mind doesn't mean that. That's what I used to think. That's what I wanted it to be. You know, I didn't want to have any problems or any challenges or struggles, but that's not real life. You know, this road of happy destiny means I get to experience all the human emotions that we've been gifted with. They are a gift. I just didn't want to see it that way for, you know, for a long time. But human emotions are a gift from, you know, my higher power. And I get to the opportunity to, you know, as I'm trudging, to experience all the feelings that I've been given. And I'm just so grateful that I have this program that is a design for living, that works in any situation. There is not a situation that I've encountered in the last couple of years, and there's been some challenging ones, that God hasn't been able to see me through. So I do feel blessed and privileged to be a member of this fellowship. And I've been in this fellowship more than half my life. And I'm so grateful. All right. So I think that will take us to just about time. So we'd like to thank everyone who attended this workshop. Thank you again to our speakers, Ellen and Melissa. And we'll now close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
I will be done. Amen.
But they said,
thank you for all the service.
Thanks to everybody for their service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you.